found this in Ganarum. Ganarmir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
It has been way too long since we've done this.
Yes. And here we are, again.
Again, we're back. We didn't mean to scare you. I was in the hospital for a week.
Which scared all of us.
And then I've been recovering at home for another week. And I'm still trying to recover, but it's been 2 weeks. I'm feeling a little bit better, so we are here. And because I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, or you know, a week, and then you know recovering for a week, I thought the next episode we should talk about should be a night in sick bay.
That was a great plan.
I didn't remember it was a Porthos episode.
I was about to say, we were all sitting here going, so, we're saying effectively that David is Porthos. Wow. There's a statement.
Yeah, I didn't remember this was a Porthos episode. And I just was like, look, I've been in the hospital a long time. It's been, and then I just remembered there was an episode called The Night in Sick Bay. I'm like, this has got to be the episode for when I come back from being sick. So it just works. And it also works because it's kind of like the third of this trilogy between like the T'Pol Archer like romance thing, and then it never goes anywhere ever again as far as I can recall. And right. Then it starts switching over to the Trip T'Pol thing, which I don't know, I kind of like the Archer T'Pol thing better, but you know, whatever.
I don't know. I think that's like unresolved Kirk Spock slash fiction going on there, you know. It did have Archer and T'Pol, you know. We really wanted Kirk and Spock to be slash fiction, but instead we ended up with, So I liked it. It's kind of like the Riker-Troy thing, you know. When it went to Riker-Worf.
Yes, Riker-Worf. That was really Riker interesting. Riker-Worf
slash fiction starting right now. Rule 34.
When it went, Google Worf Riker Rule 34. I'm sure it's there. Maybe you should.
Troy and Worf. That was. I felt like that was a much more genuine relationship.
The Worf and Troy.
Yeah.
Really?
I felt that was. I mean, the Imzadi thing. Well, because it's like real life for you to have an ex-girlfriend that you work with or whatever. You know, that's like a real life thing.
I never got the Troy Worf thing because like I never got that Troy was into pain, especially after you see the Jadzia Worf thing going on. The Jadzia Worf thing, like you know, Jadzia's like she's been with Klingons a long time in her past life. She's dealt with them a long time. She doesn't mind the pain, the blood, and the broken bones. Like I just can't see Diana Troy like getting into that.
Yeah, and neither can I. And actually, my feeling was that Worf just simply said, well, this is my lot in life to not do the pain thing, and got over it, you know, for the duration of the Deanna Troi thing.
Which was like which was like three episodes.
Yeah, but it was the last episode. So, I mean, we don't know how many episodes in air quotes existed between the last episode, All Good Things, and... You know, and Generations. So we don't really know.
Oh, they weren't even together in Generations.
Right, but we don't know how many.
But there was the episode where Worf got into all those fractured times where he was still dating Troy.
Yeah.
So it was a couple. It was like the last couple episodes where they were dating.
It was like the last few seasons. It seems like, wasn't that a sixth season episode? No, it was a seventh season. You're right. So it was only really the seventh season that they were involved.
For whatever reason, seventh season of TNG gets really Worf heavy. It's like they got tired of being Data heavy, and so they just got really Worf heavy in the seventh season, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, when I was watching seventh season was weird for me because it was the last year of high school for me, and my first year of being at work and having a job and doing all that. So I missed a lot of the seventh season episodes. because I graduated from high school in sixth season. So seventh season was like the first time being an adult, you know. So
yeah.
A lot of seventh season is like really weird for me because I don't remember all the pieces of it. And I'm like, I know. And like when I went back and watched all of the episodes again, I discovered that I had completely missed an entire episode. I just never saw it. So, you know, for the first time ever, I saw an episode of TNG like a year ago. And I was like, that's just really strange. That and is, it was so strange.
That, is, that has got to be really weird. Like, I was still a kid, like sixth grade, seventh grade, maybe, when season seven was on. Because yeah. We were still living in Louisiana. My mom made pizza every Saturday night, homemade pizza. It was amazing. Thanks, Mom, if you're listening. It was awesome. She's made me a pizza addict, although she's probably not very proud of that. She doesn't like that I like pizza as much as I do. But,
yep, we won't go there.
But Tom Paris likes pizza a lot because he begged me for it a couple times.
And makes B'Elanna just deal with it.
Yeah, just deal with it, B'Elanna.
Yeah, deal with it.
I don't want gah on my pizza. No, thank you.
No gah on my pizza. It's like the Japanese who put mayonnaise and corn on their pizza.
Oh.
And you're like, what?
That's not
pizza. Yeah, and then they look at me weird whenever I go in and order pepperoni and mushroom. They look at me like I'm strange, and I'm like, look, we invented this. You can't tell me I'm ordering it wrong.
You can't tell me I'm doing it wrong. It was our invention.
You can't tell me I'm doing it wrong. You borrowed this food from us. They corrupted it.
You corrupted it.
And now you're looking at me like I'm weird.
silly. Just different cultural things. It's always.
Oh, I'm sure they have the same problem when they come over and eat California rolls. That's nothing like what you get when you're in Japan.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's nothing like it.
Well, that's. We corrupt their food; they corrupt ours.
That's what cultures do for each other. We corrupt each other's food. This is what we do. We corrupt each other's food, and you know, it makes it good. You know, lots of nice American, Mexican food, American, you know, Japanese food, Chinese food, which is nothing like they have in either of those places.
Yeah, like I'm a big fan of Tex-Mex, which you know. That's nothing like Mexican
food. That's why it's got Tex. So it's like Texas, right?
Yeah, it's Texas. It's Texas Mexican food, which is it's really tasty because, well, I mean, my family grew up in Texas, or my family's from Texas, yeah. So Tex-Mex is. So whenever I eat, like, Californian-style Mexican food, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, but my wife and I have talked about this. The Californian version is fresher, and it's true. They've got fresher vegetables. It's, you know, it's a much fresher taste. And the Mexican one is richer and has, you know, more textures. And it's so there's benefits to both sides of the Mexican food thing. How did we get on food? Your mom and
– Yeah, because we watched Next Generation and she made – It came on Saturday, and she made the most amazing, awesome homemade pizzas on Saturday. So we watched Next Generation. That's what I remember most about watching TNG as a kid. Like, I didn't pick up on all the nuances, like the Worf-Troy thing. I didn't get until I watched TNG, you know, later. I guess after 2009, I, like, basically gotten all the Star Trek episodes and watched them all the way through again. And then that's when I was like, huh, that's really weird that Worf and Troy got together. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's weird because I actually, like I said, I liked Worf and Troy better than I liked Riker and Troy. Which is funny because I feel like Riker and Troy in Insurrection was much more genuine and real again. You know, it was like they brought them back for Insurrection. And that was actually very reasonable and a decent... You know what I mean? It's like
they were never really datey on the show, though. I mean, of course, there's, you know, Angel One, where not Angel One, a Haven, where you know, she's supposed to get married, and he gets all jealous. But like, they're never really datey in the show.
No,
like they just mention their past relationship over and over again, and he gets jealous whenever. But I mean, he sleeps with every girl he runs across in the show.
Right, and she doesn't get jealous. She had every right to be.
she had more right than him.
Yeah, she had more right than he did.
Way more right. Although she did get impregnated at least a couple times by weird space entities, so...
Yeah, it's because she was the attractive one of the show, so they decided that they had to...
She had to be the one
they
who
had
knocked
to do the
up.
Sex thing, which we'll talk about next month, next week's episode, more in detail.
Yes, indeed, because you know, we're just gonna go and be children, and the next episode,
we're gonna let our inner 12-year-old. And yeah, totally.
Next episode being episode 69, we're gonna, you know, definitely latch onto that number and have some
and
fun
roll
next
with it.
Week.
Yeah. So anyway, we're doing a Night in Sick Bay, which is a Porthos episode in honor of our beloved David, who was in sick bay last week and the week before. Well, the week before. So yeah, would you like me to go ahead and read the Wicca rundown?
Make it so, number one.
After a 5-day away mission spent apologizing on the planet Cree Tessa, the away team consisting of Captain Archer, Sub-Commander T'Pol, Ensign Sato, and Archer's dog Porthos...
Make sexy time rubbing each other with
yep.
the gel.
Return to the ship to decontaminate.
Mm, that's what they call it now.
That's in air quotes. Porthos has acquired a pathogen on the planet's surface and must be quarantined. Archer learns from Commander Tucker of the ship's need for an extra plasma injector from the Cree Tassins. But negotiations break down after it's discovered that Porthos has peed on a sacred tree.
Oh, those poor sacred trees.
Insulting
the Cree Tassins. Never be the same.
Archer reacts poorly to the news. That's an understatement. And and is given a list of requirements he must meet in order to apologize.
Including singing a Christmas carol on one leg.
Right. He and Dr. Phlox then tend to Porthos, and Archer spends the night in sick bay to be with his pet. Throughout the night, as Porthos' immune systems weakens, Archer experiences Phlox's side of life in sick bay. During the night, as he dreams of Porthos's funeral, Archer also deals with unresolved and suppressed sexual tension.
This is from the faceplant that he had in season, I think, 1 or 2. Shadows of Pajim. He just planted his face in those boobies after they were tied together.
You got it.
He also relates to Phlox how he met Porthos and how he was the last in a litter of 4 male puppies. The 4 Musketeers. Through it all, Archer struggles to reach an emotional understanding with Phlox and T'Pol. It's a threesome. As the 2 alien senior crew members have little grasp of the human-pet relationship, and Phlox keeps offering Archer unsolicited advice about dealing with his apparent feelings for T'Pol. T'Pol, working out in the gym, also keeps urging Archer to apologize to the Cree Tassins for Porthos's behavior, but Archer resists because he blames them for Porthos's illness. In the end, Porthos recovers following a pituitary transplant from an alien chameleon. Finally swallowing his pride, Archer then goes down to the Cree Tassin capital and delivers an intricate ritual apology, which involves slicing a tree trunk with a chainsaw, arranging the pieces of wood in a complex pattern on the ground, and chanting phrases in the Cree Tassin language. Having successfully apologized to the Cree Tassin, the crew finally managed to produce 3 plasma injectors prior to their departure.
Okay. Love those plasma injectors. Trip just wanted to rub his hand all up and down those things.
Yeah,
let's get it going.
Yeah, baby.
But
so yeah, that's an interesting one. A Night in Sick Bay is episode 5 of season 2. It's directed by David Strayton, written by Rick Berman and Braga, and Brennan Braga. It had interesting. It was a different music person doing it, which was Paul Bielargion. I don't know. And it was aired on October 16th of 2002. So there you go.
This was a really interesting episode. Like, it's just so weird. Like all the different things that Phlox does. Like, he wakes Archer up, like, cutting his toenails. And, like, it's weird. His toenails are completely different than his fingernails.
Right.
They're, like, weird lizardy things on his feet. He's got to cut with, like, a laser.
And he's got the long tongue and goofy things that we all think are... You know, it's because Billingsley is a comedic actor. He's a character actor. So they figured they'd let him stretch his legs a little.
I've never seen him in anything funny.
Which is funny because that's what he's billed as. That's what he's set up as sort of a character actor, and he never does anything funny. But he's got a great sense of comedic timing, and he's really good at that. Another interesting thing is the Kritosan captain is Vaughn Armstrong, who's nice. Admiral Forrest. Which I find particularly humorous in this particular episode.
They look so weird. They look like they're like they don't have any outer skin. They look like just muscles on bone. Yeah. They're weird looking things. Yeah.
Well, and actually, apparently, Vaughn Armstrong also played the same character in Vox Sola, which was in the first season.
Which they referenced, they're like, oh, they ate in front of them, and they got so offended by eating in front of them, because apparently eating is like sex to them.
Don't
know.
Yeah, I know people who think that's true in real life. Yeah.
Really?
Might as well be. Talk to people from, like, France and stuff like that, and they talk about how obsessed we are with food, and the fact that we spent a good portion of this particular podcast talking about food. I'm almost tempted to say they're right.
Food is good.
Food is good. Especially good Tex-Mex.
Especially good food. Especially pizza.
Yeah, good pizza. Yeah. So it's interesting. Lots of things are involved in this particular episode. They're fascinating. It was directed by David Strayton, who did Desert Crossing earlier, and stuff like that. That was cool. It was supposed to be a low-cost bottle episode, which is good because that's, you know, bottle episodes are one of the things they always go to when they're like, well, we run out of our budget. And
it's kind of early in the season to run out of your budget.
Yeah, well, they probably were just budgeting at this point in time. I don't think they were necessarily running out, but they were like, you know what, we could save our money and do something cool at the end of the season if we bottle episode a couple of episodes during this time, you know.
In the original series,
we had a lot of bottle episodes because they ran out of budget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, they were also very limited on their budget anyway in the original series.
It's just fascinating from reading the books by Mark Cushman, because the number of times that the network said, you need to go out and planets more, and the production team said, okay, are you going to give us money? And the network was like, no, just find a way. The number of times they were told to not do bottle episodes, and then they couldn't afford to do anything but bottle episodes. It was just amazing.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
It was really bonkers. So Porthos, there are, of course, two beagles portraying Porthos, and they were supplied by the Performing Animal Troupe, which is an animal supply company for film and television. They had a female beagle called Breezy, who was the main dog actor who played Porthos during all of season two. And Breezy was the original double for the male dog actor, Prada, who appeared in the first season. So Breezy took over in the second season as Porthos. So anyway, because there was more than one scene, it says, proved problematic for Breezy during the filming, as the decontamination room set was an enclosed four-wall set, meaning the scene where Archer rubs down Porthos with contamination gel, Breezy's trainer couldn't be on set with her. And so normally he would have been behind the camera assisting the director by ensuring the dog is looking wherever the scene needed. Uh-huh. So anyway, so that Breezy, of course, wouldn't look directly at the camera, because that's an important thing. Yeah. You never think about the weird things you have to deal with whenever you have, like, animals on set. But, like, they'll look right at the camera. And you're like, okay, well, that won't work. We have to scrap that shot now. Anyway, that's a lot of things, just interesting pieces that they had to do.
They had the two prosthetic dogs, one for, like, the weird sitting position in the tank he was in sick bay, and the other one for the other tank that was actually had water in it.
Right.
Yeah, someone to drown your dog. It'll only be for an hour. It'll be fine.
Right.
You're going to drown my dog? He got really intense about that. And the thing is, like, I'm not a super big animal person. Like, I've never, like, had that kind of bond with an animal. So, like, it's kind of weird that I picked this episode because, like I said, like, at the very beginning, like, I'd forgotten it was a Porthos episode. I was picking the episode just upon my life predicament and how the name of the episode went with my life predicament.
Right.
Fortunately, I didn't have any bats flying around in my room. I didn't have, you know,
slugs
or weird Beaches. Alien with a long tongue and fingernail cutting. Although I did have intense pain in my legs, and only Dilaudid let me go to sleep. So that was, you know, kind of nice getting Dilaudid.
Yeah.
They try to put a vacuum bandage on me, but that didn't work out, and so I'm dealing with the fun stuff called Dakin's solution, which I think they invented around World War I to prevent infection in people. It worked better than saline because it's good.
Right.
It's like it's partially bleach.
Sounds like so much fun.
So the bleach kills the, you know, bacteria in the wound, because my wound is not sewn, it's not stitched, it's open, and it's got to heal from the inside out. So that's my situation right now. Thanks, guys.
Whew, yeah, it's not any fun.
Not any fun.
Oh, man.
But the show must go on. We've had a 2-week break.
The show must go on. Here we are.
So we're here. We're here for you guys. I hope like that we are back with a vengeance. And next time on 69, that'll be definitely very, very interesting.
Yep.
So
interestingly did you know that Von Armstrong goes all the way back to Next Gen Episode 1, Heart of Glory?
Who did he play in that?
That's a good question. Chorus. He played Chorus. So he was like the lead Klingon.
Yeah, he's been on Star Trek for all. I mean, it's great how Star Trek like keeps its like actors together. And we kind of discussed this a little bit when we talked about Flashback, how like they tried really, really hard to get all the actors from the Bridge, from the Excelsior together for that episode for Voyager. They tried to get all
people back who even weren't even they weren't even actors anymore.
Oh, speaking of that episode, did you follow up with your friend?
Wait, what was I supposed to do?
You said you were gonna your mom knew one of the guys who was on the bridge. Did you follow?
Yeah, I went looking for him. I haven't found him yet. He's fallen off of the planet, which means that he's no longer working. Which makes sense. He was an 80s actor, so I mean, I would presume that, you know. Yeah, Joe Farrago. Hey, Joe, if you're listening to this, give me a holler.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, Joe Farrago was on the bridge of the Excelsior. I don't know if they called him back for Flashback. I have no earthly idea. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I just because I was mentioning it, I was like, oh, yeah, you said you were trying to follow up with the guy. I was wondering if you had caught up with him. That would have been kind of interesting.
No, he actually is apparently still in... He's still working.
Nice.
I didn't think to look him up in Wikipedia. Huh.
The power of the internet.
Compels me.
The power of the internet compels you.
Yeah, I remember him being in The Abyss. That's right. He was in The Abyss in Terminator 1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he usually does a very good Anchorman.
Okay, yeah.
So he's usually the Anchorman talking about, you know, whatever.
Whatever needs to be for that particular film.
Oh, he was in From the Earth to the Moon. I haven't seen that yet, and I want to so badly.
Is it recent?
From the Earth to the Moon? Yeah, it's a miniseries. Well, no, it was in the 90s, late 90s, 98. Yeah, see, he really hasn't done anything since 1998.
Yeah, so it's quite a...
That's why I had a feeling he wasn't still in the industry.
Do you remember this episode, A Night in Sickbay, when it first came out?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I wasn't as impressed with this episode. I remember, because I was in college the second time. I was in college during this time, so I'd watch these episodes while doing my homework. Because as a 30-year-old in college, you're much more apt to do your homework than an 18-year-old in college. So I would go home, crank up the TV, watch Star Trek, and then and do my homework. This episode really didn't grab me very much. Now, part of it is probably personal, because a lot of the early episodes of season 2 kind of, I don't remember a whole bunch of them because unfortunately my mother passed away suddenly in July of 2002. So,
oh, yeah.
And she and I would often talk about Star Trek. You know, that was our one of our things. So for, she was watching season one with me and we talk after each episode. And so I was having a hard time with the first few episodes of season two because I no longer had my mom talking to me after the episode, which is, you know, one of those things. That's so my feeling originally on this one wasn't, I wasn't very hot on it. I didn't like this episode to begin with. Watching it recently as a rewatch on Netflix was a much different thing. I actually kind of liked this episode. It was a decent, I mean, it was a bottle episode, sure. And it had some good comedy, which offset it. That's one of those things that actually I was talking about last night with on my other podcast.
Geek Tank.
Geek Tank. I'm moonlighting. We talked about Batman versus Superman and how the original Superman, Superman 2, had these comedic things in there because you had to break up intense scenes with comedy. It was like a trick that they had to do in the 80s and in the early 90s. So I always kind of felt like this intense... I think the real reason this bothered me the first time was it's not silly to think that a pet being sick is stressful if you are a pet owner. But if you're not a pet owner, that can be played off really badly. And I really felt like they probably shouldn't have had the comedy with Billingsley, with Dr. Phlox, because it sort of made light, almost, of having a sick pet. And, you know, our family, my family, had a ton of pets. Like, that's just the way it was. And it was a big deal when one of them got sick. You know, it was a big family problem when they got sick. So I understood Archer being freaked out about Porthos. But there have been a number of people I've met who are not pet owners, and they don't get it, you know? So yeah. It's kind of one of those that it's like, you know, I felt like they probably could have been a little less humorous with the Dr. Phlox shaving his tongue and clipping his fingernails and or toenails and stuff like that. Probably could have been a little less humorous, and it wouldn't have been so bad. Because it's stressful for Archer, but T'Pol and Phlox are both playing the straight man to it. You know, I don't know why he likes his fuzzy dog. We would eat him.
Weird quadruped thing, yeah.
Yeah, your quadruped, we would have eaten him by now, sort of thing. And yeah, they didn't really say that. But it's, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of like...
Yeah, I didn't grow up with pets at all. So like it, you know, like I know I watched most of the first two seasons of Enterprise on TV, but I honestly cannot remember like the day the first time I saw this episode. I don't remember it, and I often recorded the show for my dad, and I would pause out the song at the beginning to his anger, just to be. I thought it was funny. He didn't think it was funny, but I don't remember the first time I saw this episode, and I know I've seen it, you know, within the last couple of years, but like I said, you know, I totally forgot it was a Porthos episode. And I just think it was so strange that, like, you know, that there's even a dog on the ship anyway. But I guess they had to do something to make this captain different. You know, you got Picard who's bald, you got, you know, Kirk who's the ladies' man, you've got you know, Janeway who looks coffee, you've got Sisko who's got a son, and then so you've got Sisko who's got a dog. So you got to make all the captains a little bit different.
Yeah, and apparently poor Porthos or some descendant of Porthos gets beamed somewhere by Scotty.
Yeah, Admiral Archer's prized beagle.
Yeah.
I'll let you know when it rematerializes.
Yeah.
Which I really wish they would have, like, gotten Scott Bakula, like, put him in really old age makeup and, like, had him there on the council. That would have been fantastic. I mean, they referenced him. So, I mean, he's alive.
They
did.
They referenced him.
That would have been so awesome if he was there.
He would have been ancient, though.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's, what, 70 years different? So, I mean, yeah, it'd be like, you know, the old age makeup they put on, you know, Bones for the next gen.
Yeah, but I mean, he would have been ancient. If you think that this was, what, 2165. So he would have been 150. When does this take? What is the? Oh, come on.
What is the start date?
Yeah, what's the start date on? Because they don't have a start date on Wikipedia. Hang on real quick. Let me go to Memory Alpha. Because you need to check the Trekkie spot if you're going to do this.
Well, but I know the original series star dates are really, like, aren't.
Right, they have real dates, right? So, oh. A night in sick bay would have been, let's see, unknown. 2152. That would have been 112, 113 years before Kirk and Bones and stuff
really?
Like that.
It's that long? Hang on.
Well, yeah, because it's 2265. Or 2266 is when... 2266 is when the cage takes place. And then it's 2267, 68, 69 are TOS.
Well, yeah,
so
the J.J. Abrams
if this is 2252...
The J.J. Abrams films aren't in the same... I mean, they're roughly the same time, but...
Well, they'd have to be exactly the same time.
No, because the event in the cage never happened.
Oh, that's right.
It's 2255. 2255 is when Kirk has the bar fight.
Okay, so that puts it at 103 years later after this episode. And so he would have been 150. Because
which is probably about how old Bones was. Or,
yeah, you're right. It would have fit. He would have been okay.
At the beginning of
we have TNG. Precedent. Yeah, we have precedent.
Because I mean, he had to. Bones was old, and you know, he was the oldest of the original series crew, except for maybe Scotty. Maybe like you know, even in the movie, so he's probably like you know, 60s, 70s. You know, at the end of you know Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's another 70 years later.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, yeah, it's...
And then, you know, we've got Chekhov still alive in Star Trek Renegades.
Yes!
And that's, like, even... That's another, like, 10 years after...
But
Chekhov was the youngest one.
He's the youngest
of
one.
Of the original series
sense.
Crew. Although, I saw something that they're trying to get Nichelle Nichols... In Renegades also, so that
they're trying to get everybody into Renegades. They've got like Terry Farrell into Renegades. I don't know who. Well, I mean, I don't know how they're going to bring back Dax.
I don't know how they're going to bring back Dax either. She's dead. She's dead in both universes. She died in the Mirror Universe too. So like you know, it's not like they could even like bring back the Mirror Universe Dax and just keep her in the Prime timeline.
Yeah.
No, they killed her in both timelines.
They did. They wiped her out in both timelines. So weird.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it going to make as little sense as, you know, Lexa being Khan's daughter? I mean, it's just they're throwing so many actors at Renegades. I just don't know.
It feels kind of like they're working hard to
get donations by bringing in all these actors, but I don't know how a story is going to work with all these actors, because I at the end of Renegades, I felt like they had the perfect size crew to go on, you know, new missions and be like a Star Trek show. But then now they're bringing in like you know another like dozen actors, and I'm just like, where are these guys gonna fit?
Right. Wow. I didn't realize it started in 2233.
What?
Star Trek 10 or Star Trek?
Oh, yo, yeah, with the Kelvin.
Yeah, with the Kelvin. The Kelvin section starts in 2233.
Yeah, the Kirk bar fight's 2255. Yeah, so I mean it's doable, and you know Scott and again Scotty is older.
Scotty's older, so
he's older than Kirk.
He
could have you know, and that's why he was exiled to Delta Vega for you know losing Admiral Archer's prized beagle.
Yeah,
but they made it sound like it was a recent event, so he must still be alive because he was angry enough to send out. And you know, apparently, you know, Starfleet keeps its admirals till they die of old age. Because I mean, also in Renegades, you had Admiral Paris, who looked, you know, older than death.
Yep. Well, and if you are listening out there, J.J. Abrams slash
Justin
Mr. Lin, who's doing the, or any of the others who are working on this, you know, bring back Archer. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be fun to have.
Way awesome.
Do a, you know, little cameo. And if you want to come join us on our little podcast, we'd love to talk with you, J.J. Abrams or Justin Lin.
That'd be so
fun. We love talking with, you know, new and old fans of Star Trek.
Yes. So, yes. And we promise not to grill you like I'm sure other people would because we're not really that kind of people.
We're here to have fun and laugh, so...
which we do a lot of by talking about food, apparently. I'm hungry after this podcast.
Oh, man. We're going to have to order a pizza after this.
I know. We're going to order a pizza after this podcast now. As long as it doesn't have corn and mayonnaise, we're good.
Yes. No corn and mayonnaise. That sounds awful. That just makes me, like, queasy thinking about it.
I know. And it was, and they just thought it was so strange.
When you wanted pepperoni? Pepperoni is like the lifeblood of pizza. That's like
we can do pepperoni and mushroom. Are you sure that's what you want? Yes, I'm sure that's what I want.
I'm sure they have to like. I bet they had to go into a freezer like unthaw it. No one ever ordered it.
It's so funny. Cultures are strange. So anyway, that was our night at sick bay, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I had many nights in sick bay.
Yeah, you had quite a few nights in sick bay.
Many, many nights in sick bay. But the medicine was good for the most part. So that was fun. I don't know if any of you guys have had Dilaudid, but, like, it's the weirdest thing. I guess it's an opiate. And I had never had anything like that before. And, like, every time I had it, it was kind of scary because, like, I get a really heavy feeling in my chest. And
yeah.
And, like, and then I would just, like, drift off in, like, cloud land. And the first time I had it, my girlfriend Jessica was with me, and they'd just given me a potassium injection, and I don't know if you've ever had a potassium injection that burns. Like,
oh, that's nice.
It hurts your vein. Like, I had through my skin, you could see the vein lighting up red because it was burning so much. They gave me some Dilaudid, and the first time I took it, I just started laughing because it was like the pain went away, and it was just like. This, like, cloud sensation. I was just, like, I laughed hysterically for, like, 15 minutes. The nurse looked at me like I was crazy. Jessica looked at me like I was crazy. And it was good times.
Yep. The euphoria set in.
Yes. Unfortunately, it was you could have it every 2 hours. I was able to have it every 2 hours because of the type of surgery I had. And so it was nice, but it was just kind of annoying that it would wear off so quick. I'm like, I need another one. I need another one. it's the only way I could sleep when I was in the hospital. So if you're ever stuck in the hospital, ask for that. Because it does good things. So,
well, it's good to have you out, I guess. We should just kind of – it's good to have you back at home being a normal person.
Being a normal person who can't do anything, I'm still pretty much worthless. But I can talk, and I can edit this episode, and I can get it out on Tuesday so that we can get the show back on the road, guys.
Back on the road.
I'm looking forward to it, and I hope everyone enjoys this, and I'm so excited about next episode. Hopefully, we'll have Victoria back, and Tanya, and hopefully Faith and Guy. And we'll be talking about sex and Trek for episode 69. So
yeah, you got to join us.
Hopefully, that is something you will all be excited for, and we're excited to talk about it. And we think it's going to be a really, really fun time having a nice 4 or 5 way discussion. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Well, do we have anything else we want to say on a night in sick bay before we wrap it?
You know. I can't think of anything. It was just fun. It was just a nice way to segue to talk about my being in the hospital. If you want to hear more about it, you can just message me on Facebook. I'll like let you know. But I mean, you probably don't want to know any more than what I've gone into because it's not fun.
Yep, I agree.
Guy's gotten more of it than you've gotten, so he can vouch for that.
But it was all interesting. But I'm interested in a lot of things that a lot of people think I'm not so interested in that.
Yes, so a guy got an earful of all the horribles, and so you don't have to. But yeah, we're back, and hopefully we'll be back on a week-to-week basis. and back on that bike, like we never left.
I'm still like poring over background information. It's all interesting. There you go. There's nothing really interesting. I went through the whole thing.
I read the whole Wikipedia, and there was not a whole lot of interesting. Some people like really hated this episode. Like some people like really grilled it and said this was like the worst episode that ever happened. Like it's not the worst Enterprise episode. It's actually pretty good.
And yeah, it's not a bad one.
And I think it ties in perfectly, like with the Andorian incident and Shadows of Pajem. Like these three episodes are like the tip of the iceberg for like you know the T'Pol Archer thing, because like she walks in with the food and on that platter that's not big enough to hold the two smaller platters, and then he's like breasts, lips, right. And the doctor's like ooh, two Florian slips in 30 seconds. I loved it when the doctor walked between them after he said boobs, and he's like
yeah,
and then she's like I'll make a list of the thing for you. It's like okay,
lips. I'll make a lips for you.
I mean, lisp. List. And then the look she just gives him is like priceless, and it's great. And then you know he goes, you know, at the end of the episode, he's kind of like, you know, oh, you know, it's a good thing. You know, she's like, it's a good thing you're my superior officer, so none of that weird stuff can happen from me being a subordinate. And I guess that's what ends it. Because I don't think, I mean, I may be wrong because I haven't seen Enterprise all the way through lately, but I'm pretty sure this is kind of like the end of the Archer to Paul
arc
flirting-ish like thing. Because it started with like, you know, the cuddling and, you know, sleeping together and her being able to like, you know, get under the same blanket with him with the nose-numbing agent and, you know, the Andorian incident, and then they were tied up together. BSDM style and Shadows of Pajem, and he has a nice face plant, and then this one where he's like just like boobs, lips, let's do it, like, and they had the weird like flashback of the decontamination room where they were kissing and mostly naked,
as they often are in the apparently there was like in England they ran these commercials on the Virgin Channel, which I think is funny, which involves all of those scenes of the decontamination chamber to say, see, it's sexier Star Trek.
It's sexier we'll Star about Trek. That
next week. Yep.
Well, I mean, they had like the weird tank tops. And, like poor Porthos, he had to get wiped down. He's like all his fur's all matted, but Hoshi's hair is perfect, and T'Pol's hair is perfect. Like apparently their scalps doesn't matter, but they got to get all that stuff all over the dog.
Yep. Poor Porthos.
Poor puppy.
Oh, well. Oh, there we go. I guess that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's it. There's not a whole lot on Wikipedia. Not a whole lot to really talk about. It was a pretty simple, straightforward episode. No actual scores. All the scores were dream states, so they don't count.
Yep. There you go. Well, cool.
Well, thank you for joining me, Guy.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, David. And thank you for being here and not, you know, dying off or anything.
not dying.
Aforementioned sick bay.
I'm glad to have been able to escape the sick bay after 7 days. It was, I just never thought I'd ever be in a hospital for that long.
Wow. Yeah.
My previous record was 3 days, and I thought that was hell. Although the new hospital I was at this time wasn't nearly as bad. So, like, it was a bearable, you know, Wi-Fi.
A bearable hell.
It was bearable. It was, you know, I had Wi-Fi and my phone and my charger, so I was able to, like, you know, have some contact with the outside world, not be alone in my room with nothing to do for days and days. So,
right.
One of the people, someone posted, like, I put up a picture of me doing the Live Long and Prosper salute in the hospital bed, and someone was like, "You look like you know, Star Trek Jesus." Because, like, the way that my hair was really long and the light was right behind my head. It looked like a halo, I guess. And, like, yeah, I was doing the Live Long and Prosper thing. So, like, someone commented. I think it was Tanya.
And it was Tanya, too.
That you look like Star Trek Jesus.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny. And thank you. And everyone who, you know, posted and said, you know, thank you. I thank you so much for, you know, posting and, you know, putting your support and your well wishes and prayers and everything. I really appreciate everything you guys said and you know, liking my posts and everything. I really appreciate that. It helped keep me sane while I was in sick bay for 7 days.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to have you back. All of us are.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com. You can find us online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com because we love to read your emails on the air. So if you want to email us, talk about Night and Sick Bay, anything else, any other questions, anything you just even wondered about, email us and we'll answer it to the best of our nerdy, Trekkie ability.
You got it.
You can find us online at on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. You can find me on Twitter at David_J_Duncan, Aaron at Blackbird2004, Faith at Faith Hertzberg, and where can they find you?
You can find me at on Twitter at GSDavisArt or at USS Tamerlan. And you can find me on Facebook /USS Tamerlan as well. And you can my website, USSTamerlan.com.
So, and you are also co-host of the Geek Tank podcast, which we mentioned earlier.
Which is Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and that's at RM Geek Tank.
So for and stuff that's slightly less Star Trek focused, that's still geekery.
It's all geek focused, which is, you know, observing us, the fans of everything. And we discuss things all over the board. But I'm their Trekkie.
He's their Trekkie, and he's also my Trekkie coming to join me here on Synthaholic, so I really appreciate him sharing his time between two podcasts.
Yes, so there you go, and thank you for having me.
All right, you're very welcome. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes. We love ratings and reviews. We will read new ratings and we'll read the new reviews if you put them on there. 5 stars is, you know, preferred, but you know, give us your honest rating. We want honest reviews, and so people will know what we're really like from our great, fantastic listeners. Also, if you want to support us, you can take a look at our Patreon /Synthaholics, and Guy Davis has his Patreon at Patreon/GSDavisArt.
That's correct.
That'll help support him with his comics.
Ongoing Star Trek comic.
USS Tamerlan and your new comic, Witches of Flame?
That's right. Yes. Witches of Flame, which starts up in just a little bit.
So if you want to support him with his art, if you want to support us on Synthaholics, those are where you can find us on Patreon.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. I'm so happy to be back with you guys. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
That was fun.
It was fun.
It's been such a long time getting from there to here.
It's a long road getting from there to here. It's funny because I remember everybody hating that song so badly, and I hated that song too.
I hated it with a vengeance, and now because
yeah, now I'm like, it's actually not bad.
Well, the show's over, so like, there's the nostalgia of, like, the show getting killed before, you know, its time. Because it was such a good show.
And I think I feel a little guilty about that. I've been really thinking about this because we were talking, the next Geek Tank we're doing next week, well, at DCC, we're going to talk about fan privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the, I'm a fan of this show, you have to change it.
Oh, yeah.
Which happens now a lot. And it's occurring enough that the shows are actually changing course because of the fans.
Well, you know, also there's unprecedented ways to get a hold of people that work on the shows with Twitter and Facebook and the different fan groups. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's such a different time. Like, people can, like, you know, complain and bitch or whatever about, you know, things, and then people will... I mean, I'm sure it's, like, a blessing and a curse, because it's like, okay, you know, if the fans are getting angry and upset about it, then they can fix it.
Right.
But at the same time, I see it's almost like an entitlement thing.
Yeah, and what I was noticing was that... I think we, the fans, so when Rick Berman first came out and said that it was fatigue that killed Enterprise, we all booed and hissed. But now I've been thinking about it, and I think he's right, but I don't think it's the same thing that we all think it is.
No. It's not fatigue. I mean, Larry Nemechek.
It was entitlement fatigue. Looking back on Enterprise... It's not a bad series. It's really solid. Even the Zindi arc, which I didn't like, isn't bad.
It's an extremely solid show. It's a well-produced show. Like I was like, I can't remember what episode I was looking at it for, but I was like just watching like very small segments of the show. Like not watching an entire episode, just watching intently on like a 4 or 5 minute segment of a couple different episodes. And it's so well-produced. The music is head and shoulders above the rest of the series. Like, the way they do the camera movement, like, everything about the show is so well done. But it's also the most recent show, so it's got that advantage of being recent. But, like, it's extremely well produced. And, like, Larry Nemechek came on, I think the first time Larry Nemechek came on the show, he said that, you know, Enterprise had better ratings than Battlestar Galactica. And even in its fourth season... And it got canceled, and Battlestar Galactica kept going. I'm like, how did that even happen? Battlestar Galactica, you know, was starting around that time,
and it was a different channel for one. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. Keep going, because I want to hear what you wanted to say, where you were headed.
But it just doesn't make any sense. If it's killing Battlestar Galactica in ratings, it shouldn't have been canceled. Like, right. I mean, all the advertising for Battlestar Galactica and all, like, the press was like, oh, this is the best show on television. It's like, it got, like, all these great, you know, puffery reviews saying it was great. And I loved Battlestar. I really, really enjoyed Battlestar Galactica. Do not get me wrong.
No.
I felt season 3 and 4 lost their way because they got Star Trek-y. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but Battlestar Galactica was very strong arc in season 1 and 2. And Star Trek usually isn't strong arc. And I complain that season 3 and 4 got Star Trek-y because there was almost no arc in season 3 and 4, which drove me crazy because, I mean, it was supposed to be this big arc, and then they just kind of lost their way in season 3 and 4. And then they're at the last episode, and like, oh, shucks, guys, this is our last episode. We have to, like, figure out how to make the story make sense, even though we haven't been telling a coherent story for 2 seasons. But, you know, there's, if it was killing Battlestar Galactica's ratings, there's no reason why the show should have been canceled. I didn't know that until Larry said it, and it just blew me away, and I'm just like, oh my God, like, what, why? Why?
Well, and I feel like we killed it. And to be honest, I really do. And I'm not talking about you, because I think you were too young. It really lays at the feet of the Trekkies like me, who were in their 20s, 30s, and were the driving force, because they were marketing to us, and we were on the internet telling them that they were sucky because of their horrible opening credits music and because we didn't like the Zindi arc. And when they brought in Manny Coto, he was responding directly to us. And that's why we got Orions, we got what happened to the Klingons, the Vulcan Forge. We're getting all of these pieces and arcs because literally we had been saying through seasons 1 through 3, why are you guys always wandering out and dealing with next-gen aliens? Why are you not dealing with TOS era stuff? And Manny Coto came on board in 4th season, and he said right off the bat, I'm an old-school Trekkie. I'm from Kirk, Spock, McCoy era. And all of us went, yay, finally. But it was too late to stop the ball at that point in time. Enterprise was already on the chopping block to be wiped out by then. So there was nothing really Manicoto could do except roll the series to an end and try to get it out in a good foot, which he did. Fourth season was beautiful and exactly what we were asking for. But yeah, I feel like it was my generation of Trekkies that let it down, which is one of the reasons why I'll go see Star Trek Beyond on opening day with all the other Trekkies with great glee, and I will probably enjoy it because I have tried to get over. I feel like we've been too pretentious as Trekkies. I feel like we are way too. Oh, this isn't Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Well, yeah, but watch Toss with a little bit of objectivity, and it's a cheesy set with flimsy cardboard set pieces and sparkles in the dirt. I mean, really, it's beautiful. It's lovely storytelling, and it's awesome for its time. But the truth is, objectively, it's a little flaky like all of them were in the 60s.
Yeah.
So... we're too pretentious. We don't want it to be Toss anymore. We don't want it to be Next Gen anymore. We don't really want it to be, you know, but like I had said last time or whenever when I said this, you know, when Next Gen came out, we hated Next Gen because it wasn't Toss.
Yeah, like I can say, like, we've been pretentious since the beginning, unfortunately.
Yeah, we've been pretentious since the very get-go. And it was all of us. It wasn't just me. It was the whole lot of us. I mean, I would go to conventions,
but, I mean,
like Starfest, and it was just... there would be entire panel rooms full of pretentiousness.
Yeah.
You know, we'd all sit there and bitch about Next Gen and how horrible Next Gen was. We'd sit there literally for hours in panel rooms whining about Next Gen. And then we whined about Deep Space Nine. Then we whined about Voyager. Then we whined about Enterprise. And now we're whining about J.J. Abrams. We'll whine about CBS as well. I mean, it's really what's going to happen. I mean, whatever's the new Star Trek show, we're going to whine about that as well. And it's like there comes a point in time where it's like when he talks about fatigue, I don't think he's talking about us not watching the show. He's talking about them being tired of us whining.
I guess. But at the same time, there was that huge like fundraising thing. They tried to raise money. This is before Kickstarter, but they tried to raise money to keep Enterprise on. They had that huge petition of people coming out, and if you watch Trek Nation with, you know, Rod Roddenberry, you know, he was out there. He was out there, like, and he signed that big thing in front of the Paramount thing to keep Enterprise going.
Sure.
And, like, it's just,
and they tried. They tried to get, but the writing was on the wall, and they were done.
Well, I heard the only reason, like, I think Larry also said this when he was on, that the only reason they did a fourth season was so that they could get 100 episodes out, and so they could have it syndicated.
That's exactly why they did fourth season. They were willing to front out the money for it so that...
they could get syndicated and make its money back.
Right, because in the 60s, syndication was 78 episodes. But now, syndication's 100 episodes.
Yeah.
So you have to make 100 episodes to clear. And that's four seasons. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were doing. So the writing was already on the wall. Third season, they were canceled. They just lived on one more season for no real reason whatsoever.
Well, just so they could make their money back in syndication.
Right. Yeah. But as far as Paramount was concerned,
yeah,
there was no reason. The show was dead at the end of third season. It had been canceled.
That's a shame.
They just didn't want to let the franchise lose
its
it was worth it to Paramount to throw away the money for one more season in order for them to have the franchise keep that show or keep that series.
Yeah.
So which is good because really honestly on Stormfront that would have been how we would have ended Star Trek Enterprise was on Stormfront.
That would have been so bad. Like it would have
been
like,
horrible.
It would have probably been like my least favorite Star Trek series if they had ended it there.
Yeah.
But
it redeemed itself because of Manicoto. Manicoto brought it back from the dead. I mean, I have high hopes that whatever happens to Star Trek 2017, I hope they bring Manicoto on into the writer's room.
Yeah, me too.
Because if they do and we get Nick Meyer and Manicoto, Yes. I mean, magic in the writer's room. There will be magic.
Give me Orions. Give me Orions. Give me Orion Syndicate. Give me Andorians.
Yeah,
I could take or leave Tellarites, but
We could take or leave Tellarites from the very beginning. But yeah.
But give me, I really want to see, Orion ships. I want to see the beginnings of the Orion Syndicate or whatever. Like, I want to see, they talked about the Orion Syndicate all the time in Deep Space Nine, like, around season 6 and 7. But you never, ever saw an Orion.
Nope.
Ever. And like,
nope,
why?
No green skin anywhere.
It was just so disappointing. But, I'm hoping we'll see some Orions in 2000. And then in 2017, and hopefully maybe Star Trek Beyond somewhere. I hear there's supposed to be a ton of new aliens. Scruffy Rebel, when she was on last time, she said there were supposed to be like 50 new aliens, or 50 aliens in the movie, at least 50 different alien species, because it's the 50th anniversary.
You mean in Beyond?
Yeah.
Oh.
Supposed to be a ton of cool different aliens. And I
haven't heard a lot from Beyond. I have faith. Because I know that Simon Pegg is old school Trekkie. He's one of my generation old school Trekkie. So I'm holding my faith with him because he is old school Trekkie. And I have a lot of faith in old school Trekkies to realize the core piece. I mean, I hear this a lot whenever people read Tamerlan. They say, Guy, you get the essence of Roddenberry in your stories. And that's only because I understand, and I understood all along, that what he really was doing was Jonathan Swift, Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
Because Gulliver's Travels was really about the English church, the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing at all to do about little people tying down big people, you know?
Yeah.
It had nothing. It was all. But back then, you'd get killed if you questioned the church.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was his way of questioning the church without actually getting killed. Which is cool, but that's the whole point. That's what Gene Roddenberry was doing from the get-go. He even said it in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And that's why you hear Dorothy Fontana always coming back in and going, what were you trying to say in this episode? Yeah. Or is this just you wanted to have a whole bunch of people fighting each other? Because that's not going to fly on this show.
Yeah.
Which is why we get aggravated and frustrated when an episode of Star Trek comes along and it has nothing to say.
Yeah.
And why Star Trek 2009 was okay because it was an introduction. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't anything to say. But Into Darkness really didn't say a whole lot. It was just Spock hitting Khan.
I mean, it was trying to be a 9/11 analogy. Why are you doing a 9/11 analogy so far in the future? Like, I mean, the whole season 3 of Enterprise was a 9/11 analogy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Zendiark was totally 9/11.
And it just, I don't know, it just, and like the destruction didn't come, the 9/11 stuff didn't come to the very end of the film, so it didn't even really matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it wasn't even really trying to be a 9/11.
Even
they said it was. And then at the very end, I think in the movie theater, they even said they dedicated it to 9/11 or something like that. The very end. But that's because Orsi's a truther.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. He believes that the government
9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, inside job. Which I don't believe, but I get the feeling that in about 10 years I'm going to have that as a blood pressure point too. Moon hoaxers are like the number. So Mariah was commenting about moon hoaxers. It's because I'm a NASA nut. And I know every last detail of how hard it was to get Apollo to the frickin' moon. And moon hoaxers just, to me, they just nullify all of that.
Yeah. You know,
it's like, no, they didn't work hard. Really? Really? You have no idea.
Do you know what they had to deal with?
How hard NASA worked to put those people on the moon.
Do you know that that whole giant computer isn't even as powerful as a freaking Game Boy? Like,
oh, yeah.
1988 Game Boy? And that was a huge computer, and they had to make it get to the moon on the power of a Game Boy. Less than. Like, it wasn't even
the power of a Game Boy.
That's incredible.
Watches now have more power. I mean, just your normal watch, digital watch, has more power than what it... I used to carry around all of the space program I downloaded on the internet when the internet was really, really young onto a 3.5-inch floppy, the plastic floppies.
Yeah.
I had all of it, the entire program, all of it, everything that they did, all of the programming, and it was thousands of pages of code. And I kept it on a floppy.
1.44 megabytes.
And it was like, and I carried it around with me, and I had I drew the NASA logo on it. And people would ask me why I did that, and I said, to keep us real, man. To keep us real. Because we got to the moon on this. You know? Oh, well. That's
so bonkers. That's
what's so fun about doing Witches of Flame now is extrapolating Apollo up 10 years. Where would they have been in 77, 78?
Yeah.
You know? Now they've got computers, but the computers are like the Apple IIe size, the old Apples. Yeah. They're, you know, big chunks that have 8K of memory, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's what they've got is 8K of memory. It's like, whoa.
Oh, my God. I'll never be able to fill up 8K.
The thing I'm talking to you on has 26 gigabytes of memory on board. You know, and it's like that thing ran on 8K.
I remember in 1995 my dad got a new computer. It was a compact Presario. It had 1.5 gigabyte hard drive. And
nobody knew what to do with all that space.
All my friends are like, you'll never be able to fill that up. It's unfathomable. And then a couple of years later, Windows, you know, XP is, you know, 1 gigabyte big by itself.
Yeah.
Just the operating system. And then
Then
a couple of years later, Windows 7 or Windows Vista was like 12 gigabytes. Like, why does an operating system need to be bigger than my RAM?
Yeah.
It's so big.
And that's one of those things. My first computer had a 10 megabyte hard drive.